Yeah, that's a red light. That means we're recording.
Okay.
So, you know why that's significant?
No.
Why is that significant, Mark?
Because you didn't last time.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we spent an entire show last time, didn't we?
We did. Okay. And we even traveled to a specific location to do the show.
Well, we'd been there before. So
and I turned this on. I started recording. The lights and everything were flashing. It was fine. And turns out I didn't actually, that light right there was not red. It was,
okay.
Everything else was working fine.
That's funny. Well, can't we just go back in our time machine and fix that?
Sure. What'd you do with your time machine? Did you bring it with you or?
No.
Oh.
It doesn't exist and neither does anything else.
But that's
Remember
Jerry.
I know.
We miss Jerry. We need to have Jerry back on the show. He's full of, or things that have nothing to do with what we're talking about in terms of the show.
Well,
by the way, your book,
right?
That you were mentioned in
Exploding the Phone by Phil Lapsley
may be the reason why we're seeing an uptick in users.
I doubt it. It does mention Slurpcast in some obscure place. It does mention it.
All right.
But I doubt it.
You doubt it? So you're listening to a show that's called Slurpcast.
Right.
Mark and I get together once a week. Whether we're recording a show or not.
That's true. Yeah.
To talk about tech and to just sort of...
And to buy Nespresso capsules.
And shoot the proverbial whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, the Nespresso place is behind us.
That's true. We could stop
We could
through
go
there,
through
yeah.
Bloomingdale's.
We don't really need anything right now.
Where are we podcasting from right now, Mark?
From the Westfield Center.
Uh-huh.
Down the hall from the Microsoft pop-up store. We were spying on them. We were hoping to be close enough to spy on them during the show, but I don't think so.
Right.
Can you see it at all?
Yeah, if I turn my head over here, if I lean over
to
the left,
I can
kind
of see.
Yeah.
They're building a really huge Microsoft Real store in this mall now to take the place of the pop-up store, and it looks like it'll be as large as the average Apple mall store.
Okay.
But they have absolutely no business at their pop-up store, so I don't know how that's going to work for them.
Right, so that's my theory, is that they thought they were going to actually do, like, gangbuster sales
right.
with this
right.
small pop-up store,
right.
and they wouldn't be able to, like, they'd have to turn people away, it would be totally crazy,
right.
and that this store would satisfy the demand at some point.
Right.
But the fact that now that they've launched the Surface Pro, and nobody's there at the store, the pop-up
right.
store,
right.
what does that mean for the big, gigantic store?
I don't know, we saw that in Palo Alto, remember?
Yes.
The Stanford Shopping Center there, the Microsoft store was pretty much empty, except kids playing with the Xbox machines, right?
Right. Little kids standing in there playing.
Yeah.
So never going to buy anything at all.
This may turn out to be the same way. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, what's the magic that they don't have that Apple has? Products that are appealing?
Oh, yeah. Johnny Ive designing products?
That's it, right there.
See, the Microsoft products aren't visually appealing. You have to touch them.
Yes.
And I guess maybe that makes sense. If they can get enough people in the store to touch them, then they'll sell maybe.
Well, there's also another problem in that they need a mascot of sorts to sit in the back and actually be metrosexual.
Okay.
And that way, even if you're hetero or not hetero,
that would be Johnny
gay
Ive
or not gay,
it.
You can still appreciate the touching factor and learn to appreciate the Microsoft Surface Pro.
What is this? Are you emulating Johnny Ives?
I started out emulating Johnny Ives, and I ended up sounding like...
I think you should do the guy instead. The Microsoft manager, we call him the guy, because he used to always be there in the pop-up store.
Let's talk about stories. Mark and I, part of the intro should have been along the lines of what we do when we talk about, when we do podcasting, or the Slurpcast.
Right, go to slurpcast.com to see the details of it. And for each audio show, you might be listening to it right now on slurpcast.com, or you might be listening to it on iTunes. Anyway, wherever you're listening to the show, slurpcast.com will have a blog entry for each show with notes about what the URLs to go to see the stories we're talking about.
And what kind of notes would those be?
They're pretty brief, just the URLs. And
okay. Notes of cereal, or
what?
Notes of...
No, notes of barley and wine. I don't know.
Yeah, we put the links in the show notes on the site, and we've been doing this for how many years?
Five or six, maybe?
Yeah. So we've got a ton of shows. I actually know people who, when they discovered that we've been podcasting, they actually go back and start from scratch. Yes. They go back to the very first days.
They actually listen?
And start listening, and they catch up over time. So I thought that was kind of cool. Okay, so any interesting stories?
Well, there's another book. See, I always have to plug the book Exploding the Phone, which is the history of phone freaks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in it, Captain Crunch is in it, all the early phone freaks were in it.
Okay.
It's very good. The author is technically competent, so he actually understands what he's talking about. He did a lot of thorough research, so the book seems to be quite accurate about how the telephone system works, how the hackers were able to hack into it and stuff.
And I bookmarked it so that I would start reading it as my next book, but I picked up a different book after that. But let's go with your story.
Anyway, my story this time, though, I was talking about there's a book called The Victorian Internet that he mentions. Victorian Internet is the history of the telegraph, which is actually pretty old. It's from around 1840s they were putting in telegraph systems.
Right.
And the book makes the point that it tied the world together and it was very important for social reasons and government reasons and stuff.
Okay.
It's not, obviously it doesn't do what the internet today can do, but for the first time people around the world could communicate with each other and at least have some social interaction and business interaction with each other.
In real time?
Yes.
From great distances?
Not real time, because they had to write it down and hand it in the telegraph office and then someone have to either have to be delivered at the other end. So it might be an hour.
Not knowing what the telephone would bring to them, they probably felt like that was real time for the day.
I mean, because
messages back then would have to be hand delivered,
right?
So,
but at least from your local telegraph office, anyway.
Right. So the telegraph to them was just like a probably just amazingly quick way of communicating across great distances.
Yes. Yeah, like even new undersea cables, like around 1850, they're already installing cables from England to the United States in 1850.
But not for audio, for telegraph.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that would be the only way, because you wouldn't have satellites, so there's
no other
way.
According to this book, the weird part about it is they didn't even have repeater stations. They're actually able to get the signal through on a 2,000-mile-long cable. They were able to get a signal through strongly enough that the receiving station could read it without repeater stations underground like they have today.
Okay.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah. But anyways, that's a pretty good book also.
Now, that's the other book that was referenced, right? That's not Exploding the Phone.
No, that's...
Okay.
Exploding the Phone mentioned this one is how I heard about it.
Okay. When I got my Thunderbolt, the first 4G phone...
That's an Android phone.
An Android phone.
There
were phones that came later, soon after, that allowed... that had the near-field communication built into them.
Okay.
And people started putting stickers in various different places to make changes to their phone by having the phone be right where the near-field communication sticker was.
Right.
You could say, whenever you see this sticker, change these settings on the phone.
And
that was a nice little feature. People were touting, like, I put one of the near-field communication stickers in my car so that when I'm in my car, it turns off certain things, like turns off the Wi-Fi, what have you.
Okay.
When I come home, it turns it on. So that was a kind of a cool idea that I was slightly jealous of. That would be kind of nice to be able to hold your phone up near a sticker and have it do certain things.
Okay.
There's a new app called Smart QR Tags that gives Android phones that same functionality, but only by looking at a QR, by taking your camera.
It's actually not as convenient, though, because the near-field communication, all you have to do is take it in your car with you.
That's true.
Whereas this one, you have to think about taking a picture of the camera.
But other people don't necessarily have near NFC chips in their phone, like mine. Right. The Thunderbolt doesn't have that. So this is a cheap way of doing that same sort of thing, but it still does give you the ability to change a lot of settings in your phone just by simply having the scanner app
but
come
that's
up.
That's dumb, though.
Really?
I mean, you can't just change the settings yourself just easily. You have to open the camera.
Not necessarily. If you want to change like a majority of functions or a lot of different things, turn them on and turn them off, that might be helpful.
But there's macro things anyway. What's the name of the one?
Oh,
Tasker
the one that
or something?
The one that I recommended a long time ago. Yeah, Tasker's cool.
Yeah, because Tasker, you can set up a macro. You just touch one button on the screen.
Yeah.
It could change 10 settings and stuff.
Yeah, but I just wanted to be a little kid and cry a little bit about that. Yeah. I wanted that NFC functionality.
Okay.
But I'm stuck with this damn Thunderbolt, so.
Right.
At some point, I'll get a better phone.
You know, it reminds me, I don't know the name of it, but you know how NFC is used a lot for payment systems?
Uh-huh.
Where you hold your phone up to a cash register?
Right.
There was a company for a while that was handing out little tags with RFID in them that you stick to the back of your phone.
Oh, okay.
So you'd hold your phone up, even if your phone had no capability for wallets whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
Whatsoever, you'd hold your phone up to a reader anyway, and it would work because it had the RFID sticker stuff.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, so I had one of those for a while. I never found anywhere to use it, of course.
Okay. I guess RFID doesn't have to have a lot of functionality, right? The chip just has to have a unique identifier.
That's all, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Huh. All right.
I remember getting... Yeah, the one I had, Mel's Restaurants took them, Mel's Drive-Ins.
Uh-huh.
And they gave you a $10 off when you first bought it.
Okay.
When you first got the sticker. And there's some bug in the system. I remember being able to use it two or three times for multiple discounts at Mel's. But
no, that's cool.
Anyway.
Well, I know, like, Radio Shack has the Google...
Ew.
The Google...
The wallet, yeah.
Google wallet for RFID Dealy
okay.
Bob.
Okay.
Which our Nexus 7 tablets would work with.
Mine's rooted, though. I'm not sure. It's been unclear to me whether it would work.
Okay.
Good try. Hey, when you go out and buy your tripod, we can try it.
We used to do a video show. Mark is making reference to the time when we were doing our video show. I kept forgetting my tripod for the camera.
Right.
And so I had to keep running over to Radio Shack to buy brand new tripods. And, like, for, I don't know, like 4 shows in a row, I kept buying brand new tripods.
Well, if you kept it up, you could... sit in the bathtub buried with tripods, like just like me with my Captain Crunch muscles.
Captain Crunch muscles. Yeah. There's such a thing as a flipboard for porn, and it's called Faploid.
How do you spell that?
What?
Let me know how to spell that exactly.
It's Faploid. What?
Fap. Because I know what fap means.
So if you've ever used Flipboard and you wish there was a version just for porn, you're in luck. Mm-hmm. Faploid is what you've been waiting for. It's a service that'll give you personalized pornos based on your particular tastes.
Okay.
No more scouring the net. What you like will come straight to you.
But like videos or just pictures?
I think mostly just pictures, yeah. This was posted by Gizmodo.
Does it have anything for the dog?
Probably.
Like dog porn?
Probably.
Yeah.
So, again, we'll post these links in the show notes. You can take a look at this. I haven't looked at this yet, but I am kind of curious to see what will happen.
My dog had an interesting habit lately. She used to, when male dogs would used to start trying to sniff her genitals, she'd spin around and knock them off or something.
Okay.
Nowadays she lifts her leg and bites them.
Really?
What does that mean?
It means your dog is a whore right now, basically.
My little baby.
Oh,
no.
Your little baby.
Yeah.
She got tired of pushing them away, and now she's just like, okay, whatever.
Anyway.
That's cute, and in a sort of sick and twisted sort of way.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway.
So what was introduced this week?
Well, a bunch of Google stuff.
Okay.
We've talked about Chromebooks before. Chromebooks are Google's operating system called Chrome OS. You can actually get it. It's actually open source, and you can install it on your own machine if you want to. But Google sponsors these really cheap notebooks called Chromebooks that...
Now, Chrome OS how is easy like a is it really? How easy is it to install the Chrome OS on your
I think pretty easy.
Is it really? Because I recall that being the case that you could install it on a desktop or a laptop.
Right.
You could like partition your drive and install it.
I'm not sure if it keeps up to date. I think it keeps up to date automatically, just like Chrome does.
Okay.
Anyway, Chrome is like a stripped down version of Linux that can only run the Chrome browser and plugins for Chrome, and that's all it can do really.
Right.
But the point of it is that it will be cheap, and it could be easily controlled by, like, the administrator of a school or administrator of a corporation. It could control all the Chromebooks and what gets installed on them and what doesn't.
Right.
And they can't get viruses in theory, and they automatically update. The operating system automatically updates itself all the time.
Yeah, it's limited to what's stored locally. So the idea is that it powers on really, really fast.
Right.
Most of the everything that you're going to do is going to be done in the Chrome browser.
Right.
And so
using cloud data,
right, and everything will be stored on Google So you're not actually going to be, you know, storing anything locally.
They can do a little bit. They can do a little bit of photo manipulation locally, a little bit of music playing locally.
But that's changed, actually, because originally the whole idea was that it would just be like a dumb terminal connected over the internet to Google services. And now it's actually become somewhat local. Like, there are some storage. You can store movie files and sound stuff, like audio files. But,
you can do a little bit of document editing offline.
You can store documents locally as well, But it's always been this sort of like not quite a real laptop, not quite a real operating system.
Yeah, and they used to be about $500, and no one ever bought them except schools sometimes would.
Yeah.
Then they came out with a version of ones for $200 and for $250.
Right.
And those got wildly popular and actually outsell Windows
HP
notebooks
got involved.
Yeah.
Samsung made the best-looking Chromebooks.
HP is like $350. Who would ever pay that much?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, they were sort of looking good. The Samsung one that came down was plasticky. They started to get kind of plasticky. But again, the advantage
is light and has pretty good battery life.
Yeah, pretty good battery life. You turn it on, it's like there, it's on, and you're ready to go.
Right.
So that was useful. I can understand how that became
and
popular.
And then there were rumors for the last couple of weeks that Google was going to come out with a high-end Chromebook with like a Retina quality display, really dense display and touch screen.
Yeah.
And it would be very well made out of aluminum, kind of look more like an Apple product.
Mm-hmm.
And people were saying it might be $500 or something. Well, that finally came out, and it's like $1,300, which is kind of crazy for a stupid Chromebook.
For essentially a laptop that doesn't have a real, like, it's not a real laptop.
Yeah, you can't run Windows applications or Microsoft applications.
Yeah, you can only run apps that
can't
could
run
be installed
Android
within Chrome.
Right.
Chrome has an app store that you can go and download stuff.
Yeah, so I think what Google forgot is the reason Chrome laptops got really popular was because when they lowered the price. So I think it's kind of crazy. We'll have to see what happens.
Unless there's some magical hardware or something inside that they're not talking about.
Well, I think if you just touch it, maybe. No.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, so they're taking notes from
maybe.
Microsoft?
Actually, let me check if they're still, if they sold out yet.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt it. Who's going to pay more than it would cost for a good Ultrabook?
I know.
To get a dumbed down. Like,
well, all the people I follow on Google Plus love it. They're really going to run out and buy one. I follow Chromebook
They'll sell them. I believe they'll sell them. But so the way to get a Pixel is to sign up for Google I.O., pay the $1,100 entrance
fee. This is totally
speculative. Get one of those for free.
Maybe. They do tend to give things for free, but it's hard to say if they'll do that or not. Wait, where is... I should have looked this up earlier. It's going to take a while to figure this out. Yeah, go talk about something while I look this up.
Well, so the other thing that was introduced is PlayStation 4.
Okay.
There was no hardware shown other than the controller, I guess. It's got 16 times more RAM than the PS3 or the Xbox 360, which is huge. But we're also waiting for Microsoft to announce their next gen console, which I guess people are talking about it being called the 720.
Right.
I don't know if that's a joke or if that's serious. So, again, we haven't heard the hardware.
They're still in stock. Oh, my God. What? Should I get one?
For 13, what? 1300 and...
No, 12.99 for the starting one with 16 gigabytes of storage, but that's pretty typical for a Chromebook.
Okay.
And Wi-Fi only. Then it goes up to 1449 with 64 gigabytes and LTE cellular built in.
Okay. Still way overpriced, though.
I know.
For what you're getting.
Yeah, the older Chromebooks, they give you a little bit of cellular for free every month. This one doesn't even mention that.
Hmm.
I know, I think it's totally crazy. I don't know. But I always was wondering if it was going to sell out the first day.
I wonder if they're basically going to make... They're going to make three.
Right.
And they're going to wait until people buy those three.
Right.
And then those people are going to start using them and talking about how wonderful they are.
And they'll have one for $500 that looks exactly
like. Or they'll drop the price of that one down.
Right.
But there's something wrong about selling it for $1,300.
I know.
I don't understand what makes them think they can get away with that.
But the Google people are all in love with it, saying, wow, it's amazing. All that stuff for a mere $1,300. And they're all running
all
out and buying one.
All that stuff.
By the way, I talked to a Google employee online.
Okay.
He had posted some picture of Google headquarters showing a bunch of MacBooks.
Okay.
And I said, how come they're not using Chromebooks? He said, oh, internally we all use MacBooks. We don't really use Chrome that much internally. And I said, well, shouldn't you at least stick a Chrome sticker on the back of your MacBooks so if someone takes a picture it'll look like you're using them or something?
Okay.
Anyway, That's funny.
Yeah, because you can't use them for anything but browsing the web.
I know.
Ridiculous.
And people are talking... Yeah, people were talking about the Chromebook Pixel as a development machine. It is conceivable.
Really? No, because I tried looking. There were some people who were SSHing into the Chromebooks. But I don't think that it's a full version of like Linux or anything. I mean, you're not going to have tools.
Right. Yeah.
You're not going to have like Python.
No, you can't do that on it. No. But there is some web-based developer tools where it is conceivable to develop certain types of applications strictly web-based. And Chromebooks can be used for those.
Yeah, but I'm kind of
biased. I don't know why you'd want to, though.
I'm kind of biased when you try to use websites to do things like do regex commands or build applications. I know it's theoretically possible to use the CPU of a server to actually help you build certain things, maybe even compile code.
Right.
There's something weird about using another machine to build something that I think should be built locally using a CPU that's powerful enough.
They can VPN, I don't mean that. You can VNC or TeamViewer to another machine and use it that way, I guess.
Sure, go to meeting or what have you, or even Skype,
you can do that on Windows or a MacBook, do the same thing. So.
I just think that this whole cloud, everything has to move to the cloud, is just like the old Sperry UNIVAC dumb terminal days that we got away from, the acoustic coupler and what have you.
Sure.
It's because we had that it was that way because CPUs on servers were much more powerful than the actual local machines.
Right.
So you actually just used them. You did time sharing and you used the machine that was at your office or what have you. I just think there's a lesson that we're all going to learn in a very painful way by storing everything on the cloud and by using the cloud to build things and this Chromebook whole idea. It makes sense for documents. Okay, that's fine.
Right.
But for doing really hardcore CPU stuff, like building applications.
Right.
I really have a problem doing that remotely.
Yeah.
I also had a problem with VST, like virtual synthesizer instruments.
Okay.
So, and I was wrong there, so I could be terribly wrong here as well.
Yeah.
I just thought that the CPU of the local machine that's running your digital audio workstation program should not actually also include synthesizers as software.
Right.
That everything would slow down. Yeah. But I was wrong, so.
Okay. No, but with a Chromebook running the Chrome browser, you can just take a Windows machine or a Mac or a Linux machine and run Chrome and do exactly the same thing.
Okay.
Plus do things locally.
Right.
So
which you could not with a Chromebook.
Yes, I don't understand how they justify this price. We'll have to see what they say, though. We'll have to see how many they sell.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Anyway, it just came out today, so we'll have to see how people react to it.
Okay. Oh, that was a mistake. I'm sorry. $1,300? That's not...
We meant $1.30.
I like that. It's good. So, Best Buy will permanently price match.
Right.
Local retailers plus 19 online stores.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that I've seen Fry's Electronics do, for instance. Right. When you go in, you see something you want to buy.
Right.
You pull out your phone, you look for it on Amazon.com, you find it on Amazon.
Oh, they'll do it.
And it's less expensive. If you bring it up with a sales rep, they'll usually go, oh, yeah, we price match.
Okay.
But what they do is they only price match certain online retailers. Okay. They won't price match.
Like the more expensive ones?
What's that?
Like the more expensive ones?
Well, no. For instance, they'll match, like Amazon is an acceptable price matching online solution.
Oh, that's pretty good.
But for whatever reason, they only want to they only price match Amazon Prime items.
Right.
Because I think that's a guarantee that it comes from Amazon. It's not like a third party.
That makes sense.
So Best Buy, I guess, is going to start doing the same sort of thing. Although because remember the speaker? We tried to buy the speaker at Best Buy, and the guy couldn't price match.
But that was a while ago, though.
That's true.
Supposedly they were doing it for a while. They dropped it. They're doing it again.
Okay. So this is an indication that now they're doing it permanently going forward. So.
Also, Best Buy is the only place to actually see Chromebooks. You can't really buy them there because they never have any in stock.
Okay.
But they actually have a demonstrator of a couple of kinds of...
Well, they also have a good return policy as well. So if you buy something that you don't like, you can take it back, no questions asked.
But supposedly they're going to have the Pixel pretty soon at Best Buy stores.
Okay. That's cool. So you can play with it at least and decide
if you
like it.
And they have the $200 one, the $250 one. They have,
Okay. All right, what else?
Another Google announcement. Everyone by now probably knows about Google Glass.
Yeah.
Well, the only way that a real person could ever buy Google Glass was at last year's Google I.O. for developers.
Uh-huh.
They were selling them there for $1,500.
Okay.
But you had to be there in person to get one.
Okay.
And pay $1,500 for it. Well, now they're going to sell like 8,000 of them to the public. But they think they'll have a lot more demand than that. So you have to submit an essay, like a 500-word essay to them about why you should be chosen to get one.
Okay.
And you can include pictures and video with your essay. And it might be 500 characters instead of 500 words, I forget.
Mm.
Anyway, and then if you're chosen, you still have to pay $1,500, but but if you're chosen lucky enough, you get to buy one.
So why would you want to have a product that is not, like, Golden Master? It's not out in the public yet.
It looks cool. Because you look cool walking around. What we should do? We should make fake ones. Because if people are just buying it to look cool,
okay,
they could buy our $10 fake one instead.
No, you're supposed to walk around looking like a zombie because you're not paying attention to what's in front of you. You're only looking at the
picture
in your
glasses.
No, but
the screen would start blinking if you're about to run into anybody.
Right, but then you get distracted and you fall into a pit.
Oh, that's true.
Right?
Well, wouldn't it warn you about that?
Well, I'm so... Sure. I don't think it's going to be that accurate.
Actually, for a zombie, you could sense where there's living things around you and show you the directions how to get to it.
Well, it just wants brains and meat, right?
Right.
So
no, but they could. The Google Glass was always watching with the camera.
Uh-huh.
It could flash on your screen when there's meat around and which direction to go to get it.
Okay.
So that could be useful for a zombie.
Can you connect that to your cerebral cortex? And
right.
I like that.
Yeah. So,
what do you know about the
I bet they get stolen a lot.
Yep.
I bet in San Francisco and New York,
uh-huh,
they'll get stolen for people who try to use them in buses and bars and stuff. I bet kids will steal them.
If they look cool, yes. But if they don't look cool, I don't know.
No, but people will figure out that they're $1,500.
That's true.
And they're very hard to get. So
okay.
So for a lot more than that.
So there's going to be an underground market for these
for
things?
For a while,
sure.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Because they're so hard to get, I bet. That's right. I should submit a 50-word essay saying I want one because I want to be able to sell it on eBay and make a lot of money.
There you go.
Right.
That might work.
Yeah. Anyway, so I bet kids are going to steal them a lot.
So today is February 21st. Ubuntu developer preview for Nexus 4, Galaxy, Nexus 4 and Galaxy Nexus arrives today. So Ubuntu is coming out with their own phone.
Right.
The Ubuntu phone. But in the meantime...
And tablets, too.
Okay. But in the meantime, you'll be able to get the firmware for these two phones and replace the OS that's on your phones with this version of Ubuntu that will eventually become the Ubuntu phone when they come out with their own hardware.
And I'll look at slurpcast.com. I'll put in the show notes a link to a YouTube video of a guy who works for Ubuntu, maybe the head of it, who kind of talks and sounds like Johnny Ive. And he gives this big presentation about, in his British accent, about, we designed the most beautiful user interface ever. Hundreds of millions of people are using it on a laptop.
Yeah.
And now you can use exactly the same interface on a desktop, on a tablet, and on your phone. Anyway, it's just a fun video to watch.
That's cool.
Yeah,
so like Mark said, www.slurpcast.com, you can get the article that I'm talking about right here. Yeah. Let's see. And that's it for my articles, Mark.
Well, the Tamagotchi?
That's all I have.
Don't you have a Tamagotchi article?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, the Tamagotchi.
Are you still using it?
Well, didn't we talk about that before?
No.
I guess that was the last show that we didn't record.
Right.
So yeah, the Tamagotchi. So long time ago in the 80s or was it 90s? I think it was the 90s.
Right.
Bandai came out with the hardware device. It was very small.
Okay.
And it was Tamagotchi was the name of it. And it was basically like a virtual pet that you had to take care of. You had to feed it, play with it, clean up after it. And if it got sick, you had to give it a vaccination.
Okay.
And they became wildly popular for like a short period of time, maybe about a year or so.
Right.
And then companies like Tiger came out with a more advanced version that where there was like four different creatures inside this hardware device that you had to keep feeding and taking care of. They were banned from schools because kids would be feeding their creatures, their virtual pets in class and things like that.
But then they would leave it with their parents to feed while they're in class.
Some would, yeah.
So when
I mean, and I remember this being a fad that some kids are actually like really, really crazed over.
Right.
Well, anyway, the company Bandai has actually turned that the code that was the Tamagotchi into an application for Android, not iOS. For whatever reason, they decided to do this on Android first.
How about for Surface?
I don't think so.
Okay.
So, all, as you can bet, the iOS community is up in arms.
How about for BlackBerry?
They're like, what the hell? You came out with this like app that's very cool, this virtual pet that you take care of on the Android first. Right. Probably because you can actually truly multitask and do things that are quite complex in the background that you couldn't do in iOS, I'm guessing.
Right.
Anyway, it doesn't annoy you, which is nice. So if it's, if it needs to be fed, it just simply puts up a little icon in the in the taskbar.
Doesn't go woof 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 like my doggy.
No.
Okay.
But it plays annoying music in the background when you're actually doing something with it that you
have
to.
Like we're hearing right now, you mean?
Yes. Okay. Well, no, we're hearing actually two different sound systems playing simultaneously, so the chords and the music don't match at all.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we're in some kind of like scary death music.
Oh, good. Part of us coming from Bloomingdale's and part of us from the mall.
I think so.
Yeah.
So anyway.
This is not a mall. It's a shopping center. Sorry.
So you fine listener can go ahead and look at slurpcast.com and download or get the article for the Tamagotchi and download the the actual free version with ads.
Okay.
And that's actually not the only one that's available. There's other. I actually did some research. There's other applications that are quite complex too for the Android that act like the Tamagotchi.
Okay.
So.
Huh.
Yeah.
But regardless what you think of Android and how dare they do it first, I'd like to point out that Google pays Apple $1 billion per year to be the default search engine on iPhones and iPads.
That's true.
Because they get that much extra advertising
revenue
from it.
That's a crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
How ridiculous is that?
By the way, all the people on Google Plus that I follow, all the Google employees, they also think that Apple's dead. They talk about how Apple's down to 1% market share and it's totally dead now.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah,
I know. That's not true yet, but...
Right.
I mean, Google is doing pretty well. Android is catching up and doing fairly well. If they keep going at this momentum, they'll probably surpass Apple. We talked about this before, though.
Right.
Unless Tim Cook and Mr. Ives comes up with something incredibly unique...
About the Apple Watch.
Well, we don't know about the Apple TV either.
That's true.
We still have that as a rumor.
Right.
I'm not so sure I'm on board with the watch just yet. I think maybe that is... I mean, they took away the Nano, which was all being used for the watch, and that sort of indicates that they knew it was a popular thing.
There's definitely enough spy reports that they're absolutely working on a watch.
Okay.
And supposedly it'll be curved glass of some kind.
Okay.
Did we put it on a show... My theory that it's really going to be the Nike Fuel Band?
No.
Because the Nike Fuel Band is a curved glass.
There are pictures of Tim Cook recently with the Nike Fuel Band on. He apparently wears that.
And he's on Nike's board.
Right.
And Nike decided not to make an Android app for the Fuel Band to keep it iOS only.
Right.
So that's my theory, is that the Nike Fuel Band might be the Apple Watch. It's kind of a fancy little display.
Okay.
Like your people are expecting... It might just be the big giant letters on the Fuel Band might be where you're looking.
So in layman's terms, Nike and Apple are sleeping with each other.
I know, yeah.
Basically.
Right.
They're like bopping each other.
Well, they've always had that sneaker interface.
Yeah, that's true.
That was never for Android, was it?
The puck.
Yeah.
No, that was never for... Well, actually, is that true? No, I don't think it was ever for the Android. I think you're right. But I do think there were Bluetooth devices that were like the Nike puck that you could use on Android.
Okay.
But I don't know for sure if the Nike puck was something that was used on
Android. Do you know the iPad?
I don't think so.
The iPod Nano has a Nike app. It does not need the shoes. It's a pedometer app. I've been running it for a while.
Okay. So the Pebble is out.
It died.
The Pebble is out, so the Pebble is kind of causing
people... The pedometer thing on the iPad Nano wastes battery so much it just ran out of power anyway.
But that was a Nike-specific application on the Nano?
But it does not need the shoes, though. It's just a pedometer built in to the Nano, basically.
So the Pebble is kind of getting people stoked for personal wearable electronics.
Right.
And
there's a jailbreak thing to support the Pebble from an iOS, to support messages to it and all that stuff.
Well, there's an app for Pebble on the iOS as well as Android.
Yeah, but this lets you update the software.
Okay.
And set the watch faces.
I did hear that it was behind the Android application, the
iOS.
That's
because
iOS
doesn't allow it.
Okay.
iOS wouldn't allow it to get the notifications.
Okay.
But with this jailbreak thing, it can. Yeah, anyway.
That darn Steve Jobs.
Right.
Okay, any other interesting articles?
We have different emulators that are coming out.
Okay.
Like a Windows emulator for Android. An Android emulator for BlackBerry is apparently going to be pretty thorough. We will really be able to run Android applications on a BlackBerry.
Right.
On the new BlackBerry devices, anyway.
Okay.
So that might help them. Yeah, people are starting to review the new BlackBerry phones. They do like them, actually. And if they can run Android apps, that would be
They did put a lot of effort into the OS to make it, right. to make it really, really smooth.
Yeah.
And now it's becoming, I guess, more and more people are adopting it, or not adopting it, but they're looking
at it. No, but at
least
like reviewers are giving it, say very favorable things about it.
Yeah.
And if it can run Android apps, that would be pretty good, actually.
What was the theory that, the theory was that the actual, the only people that would really be buying them were the diehard BlackBerry fans who had already
and,
had...
And big corporations for the security.
Right,
and
for
stuff.
The secure
Although
Android
they've
server.
Already given in to iPhones by now anyway.
Yeah. Although my iPhones keep having the Microsoft Exchange issues. They keep having have to have updates and stuff.
That's true. Well, supposedly it's fixed right now anyway. But
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for me.
What?
Do you have any crap? Crap's...
Yeah, I have some real things still.
Okay.
There's an article about pilotless aircraft. You know, they have the Google car and all this research going on self-driving cars. So there's some research going on with self-driving airplanes. I mean, there already are automatic pilots for planes, but they don't land typically.
Okay.
They don't take off and land automatically, although I think they're capable of it, but they...
Okay.
Anyway, so they're talking about having totally pilotless airplanes.
Right.
But I don't know if that's publicly ever accept that.
That's pilotless airplanes?
Yes, airplanes, yeah.
Well, I talked about my theory behind the whole, what we need to have before we get to the whole pilotless cars.
Right.
Slowly, over time, features that lead us to fully autonomous vehicles.
Right.
We slowly have those car companies introduce more and more features like that in order for the society to kind of adapt and
be
comfortable
ones,
with these
that's
changes.
That's what the real car manufacturer... No, Google is doing the totally self-driving.
I know.
Where other car manufacturers are just starting to put in automatic braking if you get too close.
And that's the right way to do it, even though we already have the technology to basically make self-aware cars that, you know, that are totally autonomous that can drive down the street and avoid accidents and things like that. They may be thoroughly safe, but it's going to take a long, hard effort to get society to accept those kinds of vehicles, I think. Is my theory.
Especially if they get in accidents. I still say as you have different brands of them.
Yeah.
Like if Google was the only one, it might be okay. But as you get thousands of them on the road, they start passing by each other, especially different brands, I bet weird things will happen.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
That their algorithms won't quite match. And
the, the problem is
like
that as a society, I think like one accident, one very, very bad accident is going to set us back like 20 years before people will accept them again.
Well, I saw an article that people will blame the human. The lawyers for the self-driving company will claim that the human on the other car was the one who caused the accident.
Oh, I see.
That their self-driving car is so much better than the human.
I think people are people who are not technically, you know, inclined like you know you and me, I think those people who just don't understand technology would more than whether they point to the computer as the problem or the driver, they would basically want to avoid much more so after an accident like that getting into any kind of autonomous vehicle whatsoever just because of their uncertainty or fear or what have you. And I think that like that's a majority of people. I don't think that that's like you know I don't think you and I are the majority. I think that like although we believe in technology, we like to see the way that you know like we can look at code and say oh this is how this works. I think the general public would have. It's going to take a while for them to be comfortable getting in a self-aware car.
Yeah. They're not really self-aware. That's totally different.
Self-aware. Okay.
They're self-aware. They'll figure out where they may take over and take over society. But someone was pointing out, what if you're driving along and a ball rolls out into the street?
Mm-hmm.
Would it slam on the brakes knowing their child's going to be following that ball? Or a dog. In my case, it would be a dog following that ball.
Yeah, that's a good question.
It can be programmed to do that, I guess.
You probably could. I mean, there's by slowly introducing these features, that allows people to learn from small mistakes,
right?
And hopefully, adapt and make changes to the car right. so that it does do things like that. Like, sure. oh, we've discovered that, you know, 13 right. out of 20 times whenever a ball rolled in front of the car, there was right. somebody following it.
Right.
That's I don't know, true. Something yeah. like that. I mean, yeah. that's the advantage of having slowly introducing these features, is that right. there's a lot of things that we don't know about the, how the public is going to use those mm-hmm. automatic features.
Right.
There's, you know, the scientists and the engineers who are developing this, the coders who are writing the code for all this, they build for the most optimum case, and then they have all their edge cases okay. that they cover that are obvious mistakes or obvious things that could happen that wouldn't be right. popular. We're going to get kicked out.
Really? This early?
Are we getting kicked out? Okay.
What's going on? It's only 8:30. What time are they? You don't close till 9 or closing up. But the mall doesn't close till 9 or so.
Oh, they're maybe close. It takes them half an hour to go
maybe
through
they
the
have to clean this area. Oh, yeah, they have to turn these chairs upside down.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So we're getting kicked out.
I guess. Yeah, we can stop. And your point is, ma'am?
Ma'am, and what are you yeah. trying to tell us?
Do you know who I am? I'm in a book, ma'am. I'm in a magazine. Who are you? Where have you been? Yeah. Anyway.
And that book points to this show.
That's right.
Wow.
I know.
That's a really great...
It's self-referential. We have all this loop going on. Yeah. I have this weird loop going on. You know how from your Android or iOS, people are staring at us again... Okay. Facebook and Google Plus will automatically post all your pictures privately.
Right.
Will automatically move them up there.
Right.
I have some loop going on because I have the two Apple devices that have, what's the Apple thing called where they synchronize photographs automatically amongst all your Apple devices?
Well, I don't know, Apple Cloud, whatever, iOS.
Yeah, there's some name for the synchronized.
Cloud.
Yeah.
Image Cloud.
Anyway, because my iPad and iPhone both share the same pool of photographs,
uh-huh.
and they're both connected to Facebook, they're both connected to Google+. Plus. Each photo ends up looping around, getting posted about
yes.
10 times, I think.
Okay.
I haven't really traced it through, but I just see every time I log into Google+ Plus or Facebook, it says, we just posted 50 photographs, yeah. and they only took one or two photographs in the meantime, right?
Yeah, I have that happen
so something
to me.
Weird
I have that happen to me as well, because I have like the right. Zoom tablet,
right.
and I got the Nexus 7, and then I've got my Android phone. They're all Android. Google.
Yeah, and they're all looping around the photographs.
Yes. Yeah, if I delete yeah. them from one phone, they all of a sudden magically just show up on all the phones all over again. Or all
right,
the
yeah, I know, but then they get posted to Facebook and Google Plus again, is what I'm saying.
Well, I don't post to Facebook, so.
Yeah, anyway.
But, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Anyway, I guess that's, I don't have anything else to say if we're getting kicked out.
I don't really either. You know, not yeah. a lot of amazing things have gone on. We still right. are waiting to see what's going on with the PlayStation 4 and what right. Xbox, what Microsoft is going to announce for the Xbox.
Okay.
When is Google I.O.?
May, I think,
in
or
May.
Something.
Okay.
But it's very unknown when the tickets will go on sale.
And you said they sell out in like the first 30 minutes.
Yeah, and they don't announce in advance when it's going to be.
Okay.
You just have to be really lucky to figure out when it is.
Huh. All right.
And jump on there and try to get the tickets.
They do, like you said, they'll give out really good hardware.
Yeah. They give out huge amounts of free hardware to every attendee.
Yeah.
But it's $1,100, though, so it's debatable if it's worth it. If they give out a Chromebook Pixel and the latest, you know, tablets and phones and everything, it could yeah. almost be worth that.
Oh, sure. I mean, if you just the price, the $1,100 price yeah. would basically make it...
Cover the Pixel,
make the
yeah.
Pixel worthwhile, totally. Right. Interesting.
There's going to be a... There's rumors there's going to be an Nexus 5 phone, like a 5-inch Galaxy Note
okay.
kind of a phone by
okay.
Google. So they'll probably give out one of those, and then...
All right.
All kinds of stuff, yeah.
So I'd like to go. I'd like right. to go. I know you're going to send me a message sometime. Like I just said yeah. earlier, you're going to send me a message saying I got my ticket.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know if I want to spend that much.
So thanks for listening to the show, everyone. Yeah. Again, we keep saying this throughout the show, but www.slurpcast.com is where you
right.
can go to see the notes
right.
and the links to all the articles that we've talked about.
Okay.
Including articles we haven't talked about.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes we do that, yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.